Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Clint Esposito. Clint rode freestyle motocross for 16 years. Then he transitioned into comedy. I like this one a lot, not just because I love comedians, but also because it's the way he transitioned, the way he got into one career and then used his skills to that to start another. Pretty nifty. Here's a cool dude. Here is Clint Esposito.
All right, we're here with Clint Esposito. And I love this story. One is because he's doing stand-up. Two, because it's unconventional. You know, he was doing motocross for 16 years, and then you decided to go in this direction. I want to just, you know, get people, you know, I want to find out the algorithm of you like we do. So I want to get into the beginning. Were you born in Jersey? Where are you from? What did mom and dad do for a living? Tell us a little about yourself.
Yep, I was born in New Jersey. My mom managed a neurosurgeon's office, and then my father was a mechanic. He had his own transmission shop and then also worked on Harley Davidson's when I was younger.
Ah, so that's where we segue, no pun intended.
Again. Kind of.
A little bit.
Interestingly enough, my dad had two Harleys, but when I was born on the second kid, he stopped riding because he didn't want anything to happen to him, like a traffic accident or anything, not be able to take care of us. So he stopped riding. So I never actually saw him ride. I just saw motorcycles in the garage. So like I was around it, but I wasn't around it.
Right. Okay. So when did you first start riding?
Well, we had a four-wheeler when I was five, and then eventually in 1989, when I was nine, I saw my first Supercross, and then I was like, okay, we need to get one of those motorcycles out of there so I can ride that.
Okay, so that's okay. And was it like instant? You know, you said, man, this is all I want to do, or what happened with that?
I feel like it, because even, you know, we had tried a lot of sports and my mom was like, well, what if you don't like this? And I was like, I like it. Like, so I knew kind of immediately that I was like, nah, this is something I'll probably do, you know, forever.
All right. So just curious, high school, were you a good student, bad student? What was that like?
Not that good of a student, I would say. You know, I just wasn't interested that much in what was going on there. So it's hard. You know, I suppose I'm a candidate for ADHD, but I was a little bit before that curve. So they were like just trying to figure out what was going on with me. And I think it's just the way it was taught and the subject matter I didn't really enjoy. So it was hard to dive into like something that you actually enjoy.
All right. So what was the first event that you did motocross, and tell us a little bit about that as you're entering into that world?
Well, so the first time we ever raced, I was 13, and we actually went to Englishtown, which is basically like New Jersey's motocross track. And I'd only watched Supercross. Motocross was really hard to find on TV. So for people that don't know, Supercross is inside and then motocross is outside.
Okay.
And the outdoor races, motocross, you have two motos to figure out the overall. Well, only having in Supercross, you do qualifiers and then you do your main event and that's it. So I raced the first race and we started to pack up. And the kid that was next to me that I actually had a race, he goes, what happened? Your bike broke? And I go, no, that was it. And he goes, no, you got a second race. So that's literally the amount that we knew about motocross the first time we went.
Wow. When did you first start to realize, hey, I'm pretty good at this? Because I'm assuming you were great, because like 16 years, like when did you realize it was the first event? You're like, holy shit.
Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm just inherently talented. I don't just pick up stuff and then am immediately good at it. So it was more so just like, I really love to do it. So I just kind of buckled down and spent all my free time trying to figure out how to, you know, be the best rider that I could be, honestly.
And I mean, what were some of the, like, what was the first event that you won? I'm assuming you won some events. So what was the first event you won?
Yeah, like some, you know, local races and stuff like that. So I actually did freestyle motocross for a living for 16 years, but I raced 9 years prior to that. And I actually even had a pro license for 3 years. So it was a very long, you know, process to even get into all of that. I stopped racing at 21, and just went full freestyle for a little bit of that year. I did both. I went back and forth, and then just realizing that, you know, racing, you don't know what kind of money you're going to make. And on the show side of it, I was guaranteed a certain amount of money just to show up. So that's when I started gravitating over that way. But I mean, I had won some amateur races, and I won my local tracks pro class championship 1 year. But like I said, it was more so not just success, but it was more so me really, really enjoying doing it and wanting to just put all my effort into it to try and take it as far as I could.
So how do you monetize? I'm assuming you monetize this thing, right? This is your career.
Yeah. So that's once I switched to freestyle motocross. So that was racing. And then once I switched to freestyle motocross, it's basically you go to a Monster Jam. That's where I got my start.
Freestyle, is that where like the big stadiums with all these different dirt, you know, cause I'm
people and they're doing backflips and hanging off the back.
You're one of those guys. You do all, you know, all that.
So I actually owned my own team. I'm one of the first, I would say three or four within the top three or four portable landing ramps in the world. Nobody had really started doing that yet. There was one on the Warp Tour. And then another guy made one out in California. I can't think of his name. Mark Burnett had made one. Mm-hmm. And then he was in California and there was nobody on the East Coast. So I actually bought a 2016 Ford box van. And then, 2001, 16 foot long Ford box van, built a frame inside of it, cut the box on an angle and made my own portable landing. So for the first, and then a portable takeoff to go with it. So I was, like I said, the first person on the East Coast to have a portable ramp set up. So I ended up dealing with most of the promoters on the East Coast just because I was the only game in town for about a year or two.
That's pretty cool. Like that you built that out of a van, and I could picture that, how that looks, and you can also move it around. So it's like, it's totally mobile. Is that what Mark did in California, or?
It was a flatbed truck that he put a deck over top of the cab and then it would raise up and meet the flatbed.
Yeah.
But so I wanted the box van so that I could store the bikes and everything inside. And then I just trailered the takeoff ramp behind it.
Yeah.
My only issue now, looking back at that, I should have made a trailer, because if the truck breaks and your landing is the truck, you're kind of SOL. If your truck breaks and the landing is a trailer, you just hook it up to another truck.
That makes sense. All right. Very cool. Well, live and learn. So, all right. So now you're starting to, this is how this works, right? You get sponsors. This is becoming, you're kind of climbing the ladder of like, you know, this, the motocross.
So not very much sponsor. Honestly, the East Coast couldn't care about freestyle motocross. And that was probably one of my, biggest mistakes in that. I should have gotten into it and then at least gone to California to be around the industry, because they basically like to pretend like if you're not in California, you're like, don't exist. So my thought process was that it was big in California and then it would eventually migrate over to the East Coast, where I would be in the position to have the biggest team and take advantage of that. And it just never came. It stayed the same. Nobody ever really cared anymore. I mean, we're also talking about a class of people that got to the East Coast United States. And when they saw there was gold rushes in California, they were like, yeah, I'm good. I'll just stay here.
Right. So how did you make a living doing this? What do you do?
So now we're basically just going, I owned the company that booked the shows. So I dealt with promoters, fairs, motorcycle rallies, anything like that, that wanted to bring freestyle motocross in to have it be a show for their spectators. So instead of just being a rider, I basically buckled down, built the landing, built the ramps, and then started booking my own shows and then booking other riders to ride them with me.
That's cool. So that you totally bootstrapped, your own little lane, so to speak. I mean,
yeah.
Nobody being like a concert promoter.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's probably, were you able to make more money than some of the guys that are like in the middle of the ground, that are like even in California, the middle road guys, unless the, hey, look, I was able to just kind of put matters in my own hand.
towards the end of my career, I literally had some of the biggest guys, one or two of the biggest freestyle guys, like as freestyle started to slow down, I got a message for one or two of them, like, how are you staying so busy? And this is X Games gold medalists wrote me this. How are you staying so busy? And I'm just like, I'm just, you know, taking all this into my own hands and just booking everything myself. So, you know, that was it. Like you said, and it's basically, you know, not to jump forward, but in comedy now, I basically just run the exact same business model because it's,
I was going to get to that. I was going to get, you know, there's so many parallels. We won't jump ahead just yet, but I will tell you, it's like, you know, got those guys out in California. You want to be a stand-up comedian, you got to come out to California. It's like, nah, man. He's like, you wanted to be in motocross, you got to come out to California. If you're out there in Jersey doing stand-up, you ain't really doing it out, you know, like out here, you know, like at Comedy Store. So, but
at least
wait,
we have New York.
What's that? Well, yeah, you got New York. That's right. You got the Comedy Cellar and all those iconic places.
Yeah.
So, You're doing that. You're doing well. You said it slowed down. Why did it slow down?
I think the industry itself just kind of, you know, I, for a long time, you know, the recession or whatever started, the economy started to take a downturn and we weren't touched for the first probably 5 years. And I was like, oh, this will be, you know, we're good. And then it finally started to slow down. So I think it was just that, you know, like budgets started to tighten up. And then, you know, a freestyle motocross show, your base cost is like $5,000 plus you need insurance, yada, yada. So I'm sure, you know, that was the first thing to be cut at these events.
Mm-hmm. So what year was this that it came to a wane?
Probably 2010-ish.
Okay.
It started to slow down.
Is that when you kind of folded up?
No, I rode until 2016.
Okay. So you ride in 2016. What was was it a slow trickle down, like dwindling? I got to fold this up, or what was the final decision?
Well, honestly, it was more so I wasn't enjoying it as much as I was before. And quite honestly, you get to a point where I was 36 then, you know, when I actually stopped. And 2 years before that, at 34, I'd had this really bad injury. I blew my shoulder out. I broke my femur. I don't remember a week. I peed ground for about a month. And then I rode. So it took me 5 months. I did my femur and then I had to find somebody that would do my shoulder. The original doctor wouldn't touch my shoulder while I was still on crutches. So then I waited. So I didn't ride for about 8 months. And then I finally got back to doing shows and I rode for probably another, you know, year and a half, 2 years. And then I got hurt again. I broke my tib fib and I had been hurt before this. So it's not like I just got hurt and I was like over it, but it was like, I got hurt again. I got an infection. I almost lost the bottom of my leg and it was just a very long process. And I'm just kind of like, the money had shrunk down. Also, if to book stuff and just work off of your booking fee became less and less. Mm. So if you weren't riding or driving the ramps around, you were down to making a minuscule amount of money. And I'm like, it's all this time and effort into this and I'm not going anywhere. You know, plus, like I said, I was kind of just worn out on it and doing the same tricks all the time and all that, it just became monotonous. And once I stopped progressing, it kind of, that's what the fun is in that, is progressing and learning new tricks. And once you stop doing that, it's kind of like, I'm just going through the motions, doing the same stuff for these people to get a paycheck. And it wasn't as fulfilling. So I just kind of was like, I wish my career had transitioned a little bit smoother than it did, but you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, all that makes sense. Now, why this is happening as you're coming to the gauntlet, the close of this, and you're like, dude, I don't want to lose this leg, this doctor, I'm in pain. That color doesn't look right. You know, all this stuff is going on and you're thinking, okay, at this point you're thinking, you know, all my friends tell me I'm funny. Yeah, I always wanted to do stand up, but maybe I'll do that. I don't know. What's going on in your head at this point? Is that even an inkling?
Well, so I had in 2014 when I was hurt, instead of booking an announcer and then somebody to fill my spot, I just filled somebody to ride in my spot. And then I started announcing. And during those shows, I was just slipping in jokes for myself, just like saying moto related jokes. And I didn't think very much of it until I spotted like a couple of people that actually in the audience grasping what I was saying, and they were laughing. And I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. I'm just in the wrong venue here for this. So now that's 2014. And then I finally got hurt in 2016 in, say, March. And it took me until I did my first open mic 2016, a week before Thanksgiving. So it took me that many months to be like, finally kind of even be able to see myself as that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a dirt bike guy. I do this stuff. I'm like, I'm not a comedian. And even seeing like a Joe Rogan, a guy that's into fitness, that's hunts, you know what I mean? Does other things, but does comedy, kind of was like, oh, well, it's not as pigeonhole as I think, you know, it's not just like nerdy guys or whatever doing comedy. So it was more so like the progress of me believing that I could even do this. And for the first 6 months, I went to open mics by myself so that nobody I knew was there. I didn't have to sweat any of that. And then finally, eventually, I got to a point where I'm like, you know, I do see myself doing this. I do want to continue with it. And, you know, just it went from there. But I mean, some of it was even I enjoyed doing it and I could see myself doing it. But it was also just with comedy, as with riding, you have the opportunity to travel. Mm-hmm. You still get the nerves and the adrenaline of performing. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things that do translate, where I didn't want to just go and do a regular job 9 to 5 and be there all the time and never get to travel and never get any excitement. So that's kind of why I eventually was like, okay, I can do comedy.
All right. So when you first did that first open mic, where were you at physically? Did you need an operation still? You were kind of getting over that period.
Yeah, I was past that. Technically, I still have a plate in my leg, and the doctor told me that I wouldn't get rid of the infection fully until I got rid of the plate. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's probably going to have to be addressed here fairly soon. But yeah. I was definitely still drugged down from it, like very tired, very slow, not like I was prior to the injury at all. And I'd say that's more the infection than the injury itself, because like I said, I've had lots of injuries and none of them really quite affected me the way that one did. So I'm sure that a lot of it has to do with the infection. So yeah, I wasn't necessarily in the best of shape still at that time. I was working at my friend's shop full time, but I'd have to, you know, wear a compression sock the whole time. So that way my leg didn't swell and I was just very slow. And comedy probably came at the right time there.
Right. So let's talk about that. You know, like, you know, when you're just starting out to be a performer, a comedian, an actor, you always need a second job. It's just the way it is. So you said you were working at your friend's shop. Now, traveling and everything, like, I mean, in the beginning, you know, first of all, when you start doing open mics, what's your frequency? How often are you going up in the beginning?
In the very beginning, I went once a week, and then I kind of, you know, once again, doubted myself and backed off a bit. I was going once a month, which was just enough to realize that you're super rusty every time you get up.
Yeah, right.
And so then I cranked the frequency up until there was a good portion of time where I was doing probably 3-4 mics a week.
Yeah.
Where you honestly, a lot of it is just being comfortable on stage and remembering your material, because being a remedial kid and having a lot of concussions, you know, memory is not necessarily my strongest suit. So
right,
a lot of it is going over the material over and over so that you have it worked out well enough that you can, you know, retain it and say it at the correct times.
Right. Now, when you're going up, when you start doing 3 or 4 times, you I'm getting at somewhere with this. So you're doing it local there in Jersey.
Yeah.
And then Jersey's got, you know, you got to drive. You don't have to, there's no overnighters at that point. You probably got about 3 or 4 venues that you're able to do, without any overlap.
Well, being in North Jersey, and I am out west, so I'm like 45 minutes to an hour from all these, but you could hit a mic every night pretty much here.
Okay. So what about work as you're doing this, you're transitioning your life, you know, and where are you working at this point?
I'm still working at my friend's shop. So I'm being a mechanic during the day, which I hate. It's something I can do, but I'm not like, you know, I don't.
Are you still working there?
I do 2 days a week.
Yeah.
But now, the rest of the time it's setting all this stuff, promoting shows. And I also have a friend that does Black Cat Hell Drivers. It's a car stunt show. And I do the motorcycle firewall for them. And I'm building a Harley to jump. So we have already have a landing ramp and everything. And we're looking to try and sell it to like motorcycle rallies.
Very cool. So then when you say you're promoting shows, are those stand-up shows or those? That's awesome. I love this segue. So a lot of comedians are doing this too. They're like, screw it, man. We could promote our own show, you know? And it's like, tell us when did that start in the process? Is that right away? Or you're like, you know what, you know, how did that work?
Pretty early, because it was the exact same thing I realized with motocross, where nobody was going to show up and hand me anything. So I'm like, you know, and I did get into freestyle early enough where there were only a handful of guys. I mean, I got in 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. How many in freestyle started in like 97 or 98? So there's probably, especially over here, that's how I even got into it, was they were looking for extra people to ride these monster jams. And they had called somebody else and he goes, I can't do it, but I have a kid here that's a pro racer that already, when he's done with his motos, he does tricks on the jumps. So I literally got referred into it. And then I saw the opportunity. I picked up the ball, made my own ramp, started booking my own stuff. So when I got into comedy, it was the same thing. I was like, well, nobody's rushing to my aid to be like, you're great, we're going to put you on shows. So I'm like, I understand the business side of this, because it's, like I said, it's basically the exact same formula. I deal with the promoter or the venue. I have the equipment, I have the sound and stuff, because I had that before for the motocross. So I'm like, I have the sound, I have the gumption to do this. I'll contact the venues, I'll deal with the venues, and then I'll perform and I'll put other people on the show with me, which is basically the exact same business model
that's right
I had done for freestyle motocross.
Yeah.
So once I did that, I found some venues and I just started, you know, bringing my friends in and promoting shows that way. So since then, I've helped manage another club, probably about 45 minutes away. And then I was managing a theater an hour away to put events in. So right now I'm working on building some partnerships with some venues a little bit closer to where I actually live, right in town here. We actually have one February 16th. So just trying to get it a little bit closer to home and just, you know, same thing, make sure that the shows are good and everybody's happy and has fun and they'll have us back and come to more shows.
So like any promoter, you're the promoter. I mean, you said you deal with, well, sometimes there's a promoter, but then you would like kind of piggyback and help out the promoter. But how do you get your, because it's different, you know, you're going into, you know, motocross, you kind of grew up with it. And then you were able to promote that. How do you promote a comedy show? When in the beginning here, I know that you got bringers, you know, you got the other comedians, they bring, but a lot of guys
never do that.
You can't rely on that, right?
Well, it's me being a person with not a whole ton of friends. Like, I don't have all these people to just call to bring to stuff. And it's so annoying when they're like, you need to bring 6 people. And I'm like, that's everyone I talk to on a daily basis. Like, well, let me bring everyone that I know to this. Yeah.
Again and again and again, you got to think outside.
Here's another thing I've told to comedians, you know, everybody tries when they first get into it, they're like, we're going to do these bringers. And I'm like, you burn your friends out while you still suck. You're like a month in and you're bringing these friends to comedy shows. And then guess what? When you get better, they're like, ah, I don't want to go to that. And they're like, you were just a newborn infant in there trying to explain jokes. You know,
it's right.
So like this one, a lot of it honestly is, so the venue here that I'm dealing with now is a restaurant. They started an event space. So the restaurant will actually help me promote it. But most of it honestly is through Facebook groups. You have a lot of community groups and stuff like that. So that's most of it. Honestly, Facebook ads have kind of, they've like hindered them so bad, you know, so badly that it's kind of a waste of money. You'll get a couple of people from, you know, Facebook ads. But as groups, they actually still, there's no algorithm. It's just as things come up. So everybody gets to see your posts. So that's kind of the best way to do it right now is just, you know, making a Facebook event and going and Instagram, post it on Instagram. But I would say social media is kind of the way to go.
Right.
Going around to, you know, all the local hair salons and nail salons and any store that has a bulletin board and posting it up like that.
Okay. So yeah, just an amalgam of, you know, shops in the area, analog, so to speak. Yeah. And then, you know, Facebook groups. It's interesting to know that the ads, you know, even with targeted audiences that are looking for that, the ads are not working.
No, and they did in the beginning, and then it's kind of like slowly waned to where you're putting the same amount of money on stuff and you're not getting that many people. And
even in, do you do the radius when you do a Facebook ad and everything? Like just in that radius right there, like 10 mile, people are interested in that in like a 10 mile radius. And still, that's wild.
It's weird. I don't know. And again, I just started with this new venue. So maybe it's the area that I was in before. I'm not really exactly sure. The other thing is that to do ads, you have to make a bunch of different ads, because if you run the same ad for a long period of time, you know, as well as I do, you see the same thing pop up. Eventually you look at it and then it becomes the same and you kind of don't really pay attention to it. So the thing is to switch your ads up periodically so that at least there's a fresh look when people, when it pops up.
Right. Right. So you start doing these, and how long have you been doing this for?
Booking shows, I probably started in 2018, maybe.
Okay.
So 4 or 5 years.
Okay. How did that pandemic treat you guys? I mean, across the board, everything that you do, it just not wiped you out.
So I actually I bought livestreamcomedy.com, which is still my website, but I haven't. So the first venue I was at that was above a restaurant, they had good internet and we were doing the live stream comedy show. The theater I was in, the internet would not facilitate doing live streams. So I have, during the pandemic, I was doing a bunch of live stream comedy shows. I was also doing motocross video, like watch parties. So I would get the people that made the video and some of the people that were in the video to come on and sit there and watch it and discuss behind the scenes stuff, or, you know, just funny anecdotal stories. And then luckily the place that I was working at the time stayed doing shows fairly regularly for the pandemic, because we were in New Jersey, so we didn't get shut down like they did in New York. And then they also had the patio. So we actually took the comedy shows from upstairs in the comedy room and we put them outside on the patio and we started doing them there under the awning. So I actually got much better during the pandemic at comedy, because New York was shut down so much and we were one of the only places doing shows. So we all of a sudden had access to all these New York headliners that still wanted to perform but couldn't in New York. So now, boom, I'm surrounded by great comedians all the time. So just listening to the way they do their jokes, and, you know, like you do absorb a lot just being around people. If you're around people riding or around comedians, you're going to absorb it. So I would say that, you know, year, I actually got much better at comedy just because I was in the circumference of really good comedians.
Right. That's fascinating. You know, once again, hey, finally, you know, being on the that coast, it paid off.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Fair. So where are you at right now? And you're in, what are you doing right now as far as all your careers? What are you doing?
Well, this morning I was cutting videos to promote my next show. So that's, I work at the shop a little bit just to, you know, to maintain, you know, a little bit of extra income. Comedy wise, I definitely am progressing. I'm getting into some places. I've got a show, been doing Levity Live in New York, and I've got a show up at a comedy club in Vermont. So I am expanding a little bit and, you know, obviously just want to keep progressing. And as far as my own shows, like I said, I've found some venues that are a little bit closer. This area is also untouched down where I was saying where all the open mics are, you know, about an hour away, closer to the city. Mm-hmm. There's a million comedy shows. There's a million things going on. Whereas where I'm at, I'm a little bit more in the country of New Jersey, believe it or not, people that don't know New Jersey.
Right. Yeah. It's very rural. Yeah. Got deer out there.
Yeah. I have people drive up here and go, you are in the middle of nowhere. We live at the end of like a dead end street. You got to go through this tiny train trestle to get down here. And there's like five houses here and that's it. We're surrounded by cornfields on the other side and fields it, that
and
way.
Clint, for those who can't see him, Clint, he's got the beard. He's got the flannel. He's got the ski hat, you know, he looks like Julian Edelman. Like an Italian
I got to chop wood after this when we get done.
he would be doing it. Hey, how do you, in this, you know, part of your career, you know, I get it. And your type of mentality, it's wonderful to see because that's how things get done. You know, I know a couple other comedians, you know, that have done this, you know, and it really fast tracks a lot. How do you like the Vermont, you know, gig? How do you get into other places other than your own that, you know, is it a paid gig? Is it just like, no, we're just going to do it on, you know, it's a spec or whatever, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, a lot. I think the point I'm at right now, it's people that I've dealt with directly. You know, I'm not getting big clubs. Not saying the Vermont one isn't a awesome opportunity and a nice club, but it's not like Funny Bone or something like a chain of clubs. So it's a little bit right now. I'm just working my way with more individuals, you know, people that you can meet face to face and deal with.
Another comedian's doing a show and then you're going to open up for him or something like that.
The Vermont deal, they had a Vermont comedy festival. Mm-hmm. I submitted a film that I had made, like a 6-second film called Hot Farts, where we just pretend to light a fart on fire. And then my friend gets caught on fire because he's a stunt man. And then he runs and jumps, dives into the water. And that's it. And it got accepted to the festival. I went to the festival. I met everybody. Then I had the producers of the festival on my show, like my podcast. So then we kind of connected there. And then they're like, hey, if you want to come up and do a spot, you know, that'd be awesome. So, but like you were saying, you know, with the comedians doing it themselves and fast tracking it.
Yeah.
It's like everything else, right? There's gatekeepers and all these people at these clubs, you know, you got to do so many bringers before you get passed and you got to do this to get passed. And it's literally just gatekeepers deciding who they want to let in and not. And especially with comedy, like you could say freestyle motocross, no, right? Because you have to be able to ride well enough to do the jump and do the tricks, right? It's very evident. Where comedy is not quite like that because it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. And my comedy might not be a hit with you or your friends, but there might be another group that loves it. And I see people get booked places all the time that I'll just say this politically correct. They are not my type of comedy. I don't like their comedy, you know? So I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying I don't. So, you know what I mean? It's just all very arbitrary as far as getting let in. And, you know, I'm not the biggest, I'm kind of, a little bit of a recluse, and I'm not a recluse, but I'm quiet. I keep my feelings inside, and I don't think I'm the best at just going into a room and relating to everybody and talking to everybody, which automatically puts me at a disadvantage for getting booked on a lot of these things.
Right.
Which is why I basically pick the ball up and I'm like, well, I'm just going to not disappear and promote myself as much as possible and make it happen on my own. You know, the people that like me and my comedy will find me and, I'll get in with them, and that's totally fine.
That's like music, you know. Yeah. Comedy is very much like music. You know, this person's amazing, but it's like not that kind of person's music.
It's an art form, and it's right. All subjective. And I say it all the time. There's music, and that's why I say that's not my type of music, because there's plenty of people that like it, obviously. Just because I don't doesn't mean anything, you know, but it's just not for me. Just like I'm probably not for everyone as well.
Right. There was one show that I was watching yours. You said, has everybody got their power back or something? What was that? The power went out in the area?
That's an old one. Yeah, lost power for it was like during the pandemic, I think. We lost power for like 2 days, 3 days.
Like an ice storm or something?
Yeah, I think, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was winter. I think it was a bad ice storm and everybody lost their power. So
was that a show that you produced?
Yeah.
So, hey, look, you know, and that's the tenacity of it. It's like, you're like, screw it. You know, we're going to, the show's going to go on. And you had people there. I couldn't see how many, but it sounded like there was some people.
Yeah. No. That was one of the live stream comedy shows, what you're talking about. So that I did that with a friend. We pre-recorded skits or sketches. And then we'd actually have the table set up with everything I have here. You can't see on my desk, the mixer, cutters, all that stuff. Yeah. And then I actually sat on at the table in front of everybody and hosted and chopped the show live online. And I had a co-host, and then we would have one or two stand-up comedians. They would go up and do some sets. And then we would also had a TV, and we would play some sketches that we pre-recorded as well.
That's
and
cool.
I did it so that way the show would be more palatable, whether you were online or in person, because now you don't only have just straight stand-up, you have sketches as well. So it was just kind of trying to be an amalgamation of live stand-up and sketch show.
And then where did you learn how to would you have like three cameras, or you said you're cutting? What kind of little mini system can you get to cut, and what kind of cameras do you have set up and all that? How'd that work?
So I had two cameras set up, and like right now I have the one I'm using right now is a PTZ optic. So it's like, you can move it around. See, here's.
He's moving the camera there. Oh yeah. A little remote control you're using with the camera there.
Yeah.
Zooming in and out.
And then I got a regular Canon 80D, and I have a ATEM Mini Pro, which is a switcher. I started my freestyle. So before my podcast now, the Clint Esposito Show, I had Two Wheels to Freedom. And I did that. We're over 111 episodes of that. I did that for 3 or 4 years through all the trials and tribulations of that. I started with OBS, which is just open broadcast software, which is good and bad. And I finally worked my way up to better mixers, and I have Wirecast now on my computer. So I have a full switcher program on my computer. I also have the physical switcher, so I can run four cameras into that. And then I have my mixer here. So I basically just slowly, for doing that show, kind of learned all of this stuff, which there was many, many, many years of me being in the room.
That's amazing. That's great. So you learned it from doing motocross, and you're like, oh, I know how to do this. We can just do this the same thing. It's awesome.
Well, I'm like, I have all this equipment now. What am I going to do with this? I might as well continue to do something.
That's great. I love that. So what's for the future? I like to have everybody this, what's your 5-10 year plan? Do you plan that far out ahead? What do you got?
I haven't really put years on anything, but honestly, eventually what I would like, I don't know that this is a plan, but wishful thinking, is that eventually I have a at least semi maybe partner with a venue around here to have a comedy room once to twice a week, you know, if that's feasible, if there's enough people in the area, we can build it up enough that you could do a show once a week. I mean, that would be amazing. I would love to do that. Besides that, with the I have the Jump Harley, so I'd like to get that set up. I'm doing that on my YouTube as well. I did the first video, and then I'm going to basically go through the process of changing the bike. Was made into a flat tracker, and I'm going to modify it to jump. So I'm going to go through all the things that I'm doing to set it up for that, right through testing the ramps, because we do have some my friend built a takeoff ramp. We don't know what that's going to be like, especially on a Harley. None of us have jumped a Harley. So I would like to get that all done and sell that to motorcycle rallies and just bigger shows. So do that a couple times a year, and then mainly just be doing the mainly comedy. And then, like I said, bigger events, go and do the Harley jump or the motorcycle firewall. But I do really love, you know, obviously riding and performing and that adrenaline, but I do really, really love comedy. You know, I have a, somebody asked if it was the same as riding. And I said, pre-show jitters? No, they're not the same, because you're not going to die. Post-show, the feeling on the ride home is the same if you have a good set. If you have a bad set, then it's not. But if you have a good set, you're just, same thing. You're driving home, you can't shut up. You're just like, yeah, just talking. You don't want to go to sleep, you know? So, man, I just feel like everybody needs to find something that gives them that charge, whatever it is. Try and find something that when you get done, you're like, ah, I can't wait again. I want to go back right now.
Yeah. I love this. Look, man, I mean, it's a cliche, but hey, you made lemonade. You know what I mean? You're like, you segued into one thing and into another. What a parallel. And I love the little things that you did to help you succeed. And I just think it's great. Tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Just go Clint. I have clintesposito.com, and then Instagram is Clint Esposito, and YouTube is whatever, YouTube at Clint Esposito. So just, I kept it real simple for everybody. Just look at my name on any platform, and you'll pretty much, as far as I know, I'm the only Clint Esposito. So it makes it fairly easy.
Very original name. Awesome. Hey, Clint, thank you so much for sharing. I love your story.
Thank you. It's been fun.
That was motocross athlete turned stand-up comedian Clint Esposito. And I got the perfect quote for him right here. Comedians are people who embarrass themselves in style. Adrian Posey. Thank you for joining us. And I look forward to hanging out with you all in the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right, thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.